This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to Your Turn with Mike Causey, brought to you by WEPA on Federal News Network. WEPA is the life insurance choice of over 46,000 federal workers and their families. Learn more at WAEPA.org. Here's your host, Mike Causey.
Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm delighted to have you with us. We're going to have an especially good show today, and I can say that because the guests and our guest star is Tammy Flanagan. She's one of the world's leading benefits experts in the federal field. And we're just so glad to have you with us today, Tammy. And I don't know if I think I sent you some of the email, but we got a very nice one from Stephanie, who works for the VA. And she says, I have to say that today's article in the Federal Report is the best all-inclusive list of things for retirement. I haven't seen such a near-perfect list. I get more training. I get more training from you and Tammy than elsewhere. Thank you. And thank you so much, Stephanie, for sending that. And I can read it out without blushing because I had nothing to do with it. This is Tammy's list. We've been negotiating for a couple of days, and she sent it in, and I just sort of filled in some of the blanks. But it really is a comprehensive list, and I think we're going to be seeing this one around for a long, long time. But because retiring from the federal government is the good news is there are some real advantages to working for Uncle Sam for a long career. The less than good news is that there's some work involved. It's not just a fire and forget mechanism, is it?
That's right, Mike. And thanks again for having me on again today. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you posting the list as well. That was actually a joint effort between myself and Micah Shalansky, who is an excellent financial advisor. And that's our outline for a webinar that's coming up. So we can maybe mention that later
on in the show.
But anyway, yeah, so there are things to do to prepare for retirement, probably more so under the FERS system than there used to be under the old single benefit CSRS system. So it really does pay to plan ahead. And I love the questions that came in about people who are doing just that, thinking ahead and trying to figure out the best way to transition.
You know, I wish I had thought of these when I was younger. I mean, it's never too late to begin retirement planning, but sometimes sooner is better than later. And as you point out, with CSRS, you go in, you work, you put in 41 years and 6 months or whatever it is, and you get 80% of salary, boom, end of story. But with the FERS program, it's a three-legged stool. It's Social Security, it's the Thrift Savings Plan, and then it's a reduced federal benefit. So people really have to do thinking. And Tammy, refresh my see if I'm making this up. I remember back when they were writing this law, the FERS law. The idea was to save the federal retirement system because they said they couldn't sustain it indefinitely, like a lot of states are finding out. So they wanted to write a better plan. Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, who was a real friend of federal workers, took the lead and worked on it. But I seem to remember at the time the people who were working on it said the Thrift Savings Plan is so important that it will provide between a one-third and one-half of all of the income that FERS retirees have to spend in retirement. Does that figure ring a bell?
Fast forward 33 years, and that's exactly what it's doing for many employees who are ready to retire now. It is hard to believe it's been so many years since we've had FERS. In fact, for many federal employees, it's been a full career. Mm-hmm. And I meet a lot of them in the consulting business that I do. And it's just amazing to see that it really has come true, where a lot of people back in the 80s didn't believe that. They thought that, you know, nothing could be better than civil service, and probably nothing is, because it is a unique system. But FERS really does provide a flexibility. It provides a complete retirement. And if you understand it early on in your career, you can really maximize those benefits.
Well, you know, the irony at the time was, as you pointed out, 33 years ago, this was during the Reagan administration, and man, he had some unkind things to say about government, and many of the federal unions were opposed to the administration for a variety of reasons. But because this occurred under the Reagan administration, a lot of people in government and a lot of people in the union movement thought it had to be bad for federal workers. And the point of FERS was, at the time, is that the vast majority of people who come to work for Uncle Sam don't retire from it. I think it was less than a third. So for the majority of people, a FERS program is better because it provides a portable pension. It provides Social Security benefits. So for the third that make careers of government, CSRS is a better deal. For the majority, FERS is a better program.
Yeah, it really isn't a bad program. And I remember those days. In fact, that's how I got started in this whole business, was right around the FERS transition. And imagine standing up in front of a group of 500 FBI agents in many cases and trying to explain to them the difference between CSRS and FERS. And of course, all they had to say was, well, whatever the government has done must be good for the government, not for us. So we want nothing to do with it. But there were some exceptions. There were some people who did switch over and made the right choice at the time. And there's, of course, majority, 97% of the workforce today is under FERS by no choice of their own, but they're making good use of it. And the participation rates in the TSP are at an all-time high. So I think it has worked out for the best.
Well, you know, and that's exactly right. It's not a matter of, it's not an optional thing now. It's FERS or the highway. So you better learn how to drive on it and handle it well. Let me start out here with this is one of the best basic questions we've ever had. It's from Frank, and he says, retirement, older in age but new to the federal service. He said, hi, Tammy. I'm in my middle 50s and just started my career in the federal services, which is not unusual. Anything unique I have to have on my radar? So mid-50s, Frank, just started working for Uncle Sam.
Yeah, that's really not that uncommon anymore. And like you said, Mike, not everybody is a lifer anymore in the government. So we see many, many employees who come into federal service later in life. So to answer Frank's question, I would have to ask him, you know, what has he already done to plan for retirement? So he might already have a healthy 401k balance, which he can add to that with the TSP. And if he's doing that already, he understands how that works. As far as his basic government pension goes, that might be something he never had before. He may not have worked for a company that had a pension benefit. So the minimum requirement is 5 years of civilian service to qualify to receive that pension benefit. So hang in there at least 5 years, Frank, and better yet, 10 or 20, and you'll really have something to show for it. So those would be the main things I'd tell him. And just keep track of everything. You know, in the government, you have to keep track of your own records. So always make sure that you're getting your pay increases on time and your leave is going up from, you know, 4 to 6 hours per pay period when it's due, and all of those things. So always look out for yourself.
Well, you know, you raise a great point there too with the with his 401k plan from his private sector employer. An awful lot of people, when they come into government, they took a look at the thrift savings plan, the government 401k. It's low administrative fees, the fact that there's so much oversight, the fact that members of Congress and leading politicians are in it, and they say this is a really good deal. The administrative fees are so low, and an awful lot of people switch their outside retirement income into the thrift savings plan, correct?
Yep, that's right. And to do that, he can go to tsp.gov and get the TSP 60 form, and that will let him do just that, which not only simplifies his life, but also, like you said, takes advantage of the low administrative expense of the thrift, and he can keep adding to that with his TSP savings. So it is a win-win. I think it's not a bad choice that people make.
Well, you know, whenever we do a column on the TSP millionaires, people who have a million or more dollars in their account, some people complain. They say it makes us look bad. It makes us look like fat cats. And unfortunately, that may be true, but it really shows that federal workers have taken to this thrift savings plan. They understand the value of the 5% match, you know, 5% tax deferred pay raise in effect. They're taking advantage of it. But the highest amount in the TSP is about $7.8 million. And I can tell you that's not an ordinary federal worker. That was somebody that was probably a very rich, powerful, and famous attorney who became either a federal judge or a political appointee, but he or she brought the bulk of that money with them, put it in the TSP, and I noticed they've left it over the years, and it is growing, but it really is a good deal and a great basic question from somebody. Got another one here before we get into your list. Oh, actually, Eric White says we need to take a break here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM, and we're going to do just that. Be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Tammy Flanagan, a benefits expert. And today's column, which was 90% produced by Tammy, is just an excellent primer on your whole federal system, the federal retirement system, not just health insurance and not just thrift savings plan, but this is a planning for your life and your career and life after retirement. Tammy, I noticed it was last week in the Washington Post, there were three obituaries, and they don't do that many local obits anymore, but there were three local obituaries of people who had been retired longer than they had worked. And they had worked for a long, long time for the federal government. I think two of them were 30-plus years, and one was almost 30. And yet, after a full career in the government, very successful, all three of them, then they were still retired longer than they worked. And that's something to think about, isn't it?
That is. Retirement can last, like you said, as long as your career, if not longer. And I think sometimes we get short-sighted thinking, oh, we only have to plan for another 10 years. And thankfully, that's usually not true.
Yeah, it's really, really is something interesting, and people don't think about it. And that's particularly true as various people point out with the thrift savings plan and the retirement benefit itself is people under the FERS system with that diet cola that kicks in at 2%, over a period of time, inflation will get into their annuity much quicker than it will for CSRS retirees.
That's right, because it is a less generous cola, and potentially over a 30-year retirement, you can lose 30% of your buying power, as that cola could be up to a full percent less than the going rate of inflation. And some would argue that even the cost of living adjustment doesn't always keep up with their real rate of inflation in their life. So
right.
You do have to save that TSP or delay your Social Security, do something to hedge against that less than full cost of living.
You know, that's a good point. It reminds me that the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, they're constantly making that point that in addition to the diet cola provision, the consumer price index that is used by the Bureau of Labor Statistics to determine inflation is not, in NARF's opinion, accurate because it doesn't take into things like medical costs and that sort of thing. It's more for workers than it is for people who are retired. So it's a double-edged sword there.
Yeah. This year in particular, because the health benefit premiums went up close to 5% on average next year, mm-hmm. yet the retiree COLA next year for this past year is only 1.3. So, yeah, they are making that argument once again.
Yeah. Well, I got a nice email the other day when this was announced from Mark, who now retired in Florida, formerly in the D.C. area, and he made a very good point. He said, why do they use averages when they're doing this? Because you have to use something, but, you know, the joke is the Mississippi River is on average 4 feet deep, but you can't wade across it, you know, in most places. And with the federal health insurance program, there are so many options. And that some of the plans are actually going down. That's why the average is 4.9%, which
That's
means
right.
that some plans are decreasing their premiums. So if you shop around, we say it every year, it sounds like a broken record, but it is so true. If people would shop around, 90% of them could save money.
Yeah, I talked to an employee yesterday who's in the local MDIPA plan up mm-hmm. there in Northern Virginia, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And his premiums for him and his wife are going up, I think it's $125 a month next year. And he didn't even know it. I had to tell him that. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you aware? And he says, no. And his other question had to do with Medicare because he's going to turn 65. So after we were done talking, he's actually going to spend less money with Medicare next year by switching health plans, adding Medicare Part B. So it does pay to pay attention to that and to understand what your choices are, because at different stages of your life, your needs are going to be different when it comes to healthcare.
You know, and we couldn't have timed this better for a segue here, because here's one from Walter. It says, "Dear Mike and Tammy, I'm a longtime federal employee. I am unsure whether to sign up for Medicare Part B or just keep my current federal health insurance when I retire. I'm retirement eligible but not Medicare age, so I have time. What's the best place to look for advice?"
Yeah, there are quite a few resources. You have to look for them. You know, one of course is the Office of Personnel Management's website, and from there, under the insurance tab, you can link to all the federal health plans websites and brochures that are in your area. So you put in your state where you live, and a dropdown will show up. And any of those health plans will have a section on their website, and also Section 9 of the plan brochures will tell you how that plan is going to coordinate with Medicare. So that's one place. That's difficult because, like you said, there's many, many plans to choose from. So to narrow down your choices, you can always use the Checkbook Guide to Federal Health Plans from our friend Walt Francis, who has been putting that thing out for close to 40 years, I believe. And it's still an excellent resource to help define the best plans for you. And they do focus on retirees with Medicare as well as active employees. Another resource is NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. And NARF members have access to the Federal Benefits Institute, which tomorrow I'm doing a webinar on that very topic. Is Medicare Part B right for me? So I'll spend an hour talking about that decision and pointing out the advantages of adding Part B, but then reevaluating your federal health plan, just like I did for the gentleman yesterday, where you can actually save money and have better coverage.
Now, with the NARF seminar, do you have to be a NARF member to attend it?
Yeah, I think membership is, what, $40 a year?
Yeah,
and it gets you access to all of the webinars. Yeah, so it's the best deal in town, I think.
Yeah, so and if you're not a NARF member, you can sign up. And you become a member, and B, you can attend the seminar. It's a virtual seminar.
And we've got a whole library. I mean, it's amazing. Since I started doing this with them in 2015, we've probably got 50 different topics to choose from. So it's really a nice library.
Great. Okay. Now, one more question here from Tim. And he says, "I'm planning on retiring December 31st this year. I've saved annual leave for more than 240 hours. I'm in FERS and 65. The question is, what impact would a government shutdown have if it would occur December 12th and extend through January 2021? Specifically, if the government was shut down on December 31st, would the effective date of retirement change? Would there be an impact on the saved use or lose leave?" Now, talk about figuring the odds.
Well, all he's got to do is go back about a year, right? Didn't we just have a government shutdown not that long ago?
Couldn't happen over Christmas, and it did.
Yes, and it did delay everything. So retirement processing was delayed both on the agency end and at OPM side. So luckily for this guy, he's got a lot of annual leave. And I think a lot of people will have a lot of annual leave who retire this year because couldn't take a vacation very easily.
Yeah.
So rely on that leave to hold you over while the processing takes place, but it would not change your retirement date. So if you want to retire December 31st, your agency will eventually remove you from the payroll on that date and pay you through close of business that day if there's a salary to be paid. So yeah, you can still plan to retire, hopefully. Let's keep our fingers crossed that there won't be a shutdown this year. We just had that situation and we don't want to relive it again.
Yeah, I will never say never again, because when they were talking about a government-wide shutdown over Christmas, I thought to myself, are you kidding me? I mean, nobody is that dumb. Well, wrong. That was great. Now, segueing to that, you wrote a column for Government Executive not long ago about the possibility of a lot of people retiring from the government in December and January. And for background, December and January are always the most popular months for people to retire for reasons that we will get into later on here. There are advantages to retiring by December 31st for some people and advantages to retiring January 3rd for some people. So we can get into those later. But this year, maybe more than ever, because of the pandemic, the lockdown, the fact that we're all getting older, the average age of the government worker is getting older, the retirement tsunami, which was first predicted in the late 1990s, still hasn't happened. There have been ticks, ups and downs, but by and large it hasn't happened. But you say things could be different this year, and if they are, that could, as with the last question, that could present some timing problems for people.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of indicators to me that point to that situation. You know, for one, we're seeing every month consistently since this whole thing started, retirement claims have been down about 1,000 claims fewer per month over last year. So these are probably people who were planning to retire in June, and either because they enjoyed the telework better than commuting in traffic, or maybe they weren't sure their servicing personnel office was going to be able to help them through the process while they're working from home. For whatever reason, I think a lot of folks have delayed their plans to retire earlier in the year. And couple that with the fact that so many people haven't been using their annual leave. There's, you know, nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So I think that points towards possibly a big exodus at the end of this year. I have nothing
right.
Factual for that, but it's just, I get a feeling, and I get a lot of questions recently about end of this year. In fact, we just covered one a minute ago, so we'll see.
That's very interesting. Well, with your sixth sense about these things, as you've been doing it a long time and you know it so well, if you get that feeling, if that's an itch, I would scratch it, I think. And I just thinking personally, I haven't had a vacation this year, and I
right.
don't think you
Neither have.
And I have, the furthest I've been is, I think, Lanham, Maryland or somewhere exciting. But there are people who, if things lighten up, or even if they don't, if some balmy tropical island opens up to Americans, they may head off for a vacation, or those who have delayed retirement may be off. So, and it's, I guess the lesson here is, it's always good to have money saved up. Always good.
Yes.
Particularly,
you never know how
like
long
this.
It's going to take to process. There's no direct factual thing to say it's going to take 2 months or 3 months. For some people, it takes 6 months. For some people, it's done in 2 months. It just varies on many different factors. The processing is a tedious paper-based process, and different things like whether you've been through a divorce or whether you owe money to the retirement fund at the time you retire, whether just you happen to retire along with 10,000 other people.
Yeah.
All of those things can delay the process.
Well, that's right. People forget. They think everything now, you push a couple of buttons and you discover all you need to know. But it is a paper-based system, even for people who haven't been in that long a time. And if you've changed jobs, if you got married, as you point out, if you maybe left the workforce to raise children, came back and you have a different name or two different names, so don't count on it happening next week.
That's right.
Okay, Eric wants us to take another break here, and we will do that here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM. Be right back. Hey, Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Tammy Flanagan, a benefits expert. Tammy, now you have your own private consulting business, and you deal with people who are in government, out of government, thinking about coming in, thinking about going out. How does somebody reach you?
They can find me on my website. It's just simply retirefederal.com. And also you can find me on a podcast that we just started at plan-your-federal-retirement.com. And that's a friend of mine, Micah Shalansky, that's his website. And he and I partner up to do some joint financial planning benefit activity. So we've got this podcast, and we have a webinar coming up on the topic that you have in your column today. So you got my notes to design the slide deck. So
excellent.
I'm working on
yeah.
it as we speak.
Yeah. And folks, have a pencil or pen ready. We're going to give that address again, because it's a complicated one, but
it is
very helpful.
I know.
For you. And Tammy, let's switch over now to your seven deadly sins, the seven deadly mistakes you can make. I started to say in the headline minefield, but you don't want to get too offensive about this sort of thing. But this is a minefield, and it's the kind of thing. There's seven of these items. I'm sure I wouldn't have thought of five of them. And the first deadly sin you list, which is again, it's so obvious when you think about it, but I must say I didn't think about it until I read this. As he said, the first deadly sin in retirement planning is expecting the Office of Personnel Management and your own human resources office to plan your retirement for you and to know know who you are, what your situation is, what your plans are. They, you know, they're not psychic. They're very busy. So what about that?
Yeah, I think that's so true. I remember, and again, dating ourselves back to the 80s, in those days when I was working in the government personnel office at the FBI, we did plan retirements with our employees. You know, it was a single benefit. Yep. We understood it better than they did and would sit down with a cup of coffee and their spouse and we would fill out the papers for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where you're going to find an HR specialist who has time to do that today. There's probably a few still out there, but the majority, it's a regional personnel office and they're going to do what you tell them to do, but you have to understand your benefits. So it's up to you to attend the training that they offer, if it's offered, hopefully, and to learn about what it is that you're entitled to and make sure that you've kept documentation of your service history, make sure that you understand the calculation. There's a lot to know. And I think that's an important reason to attend any type of retirement training that might be offered to you.
You know, that's really interesting because you and I both, and again, we were mere children at the time, but when the Clinton administration was doing its downsizing of government, you know, massive reduction, 240,000, 270,000 jobs, buyouts, reductions in force, hiring freezes and whatnot, but they concentrated, right or wrong, good or bad, on what they called overhead jobs in the government, jobs that that didn't necessarily have to be done in government. They'd probably be done by contractors, which just seemed to have worked out to be the case. But at least on paper, they got people off the federal payroll. But one of the big ones was in HR. And I remember, as you were just saying, there was a time when you could go into the federal agency, go up to the third, fourth floor. There was the HR office, and it was almost like a country general store. People would be in chatting, smoking cigarettes, believe it or not, drinking coffee. But they would be, they had time for planning. And now it's very possible if you work for the government, wherever you work for the government, that your HR office is 200, 500, 1,000 miles away. So it's a much less a personal thing.
That's right. That's right. But yes, apparently there is training available. So not everybody knows where to find it or how to get it, but it's out there. And I would highly recommend that because you don't know what you don't know. And there's a lot to understand. You know, even well-educated people get confused when it comes to knowing how to complete that application or make the decisions you have to make as you move into retirement. Some of them can be irrevocable.
Well, the sad thing, too, is as most of us get older, and we all will if we're lucky, the technology eventually eludes you or becomes very confusing. And I watched a Netflix movie with my daughter last night, and I would not have done that on my own. So here we go. Okay, point number two. Disregarding tax consequences and not taking advantage of tax strategies. And you say you could be paying too much in retirement. And I think many people assume, and I would have before reading this, you retire, your income is down, i.e. your tax bracket is going to change and you're probably going to pay less in taxes, but not necessarily, huh?
Not necessarily. And if you've planned well for retirement, your income won't go down. Mm. I always like to see when somebody's net income while they're coming to work every day matches up with their net income that they'll have as a retiree. So they don't have to downsize their lifestyle. They can continue traveling if there's ever the ability to do that again and updating their home and buying a new car every once in a while. So you want to be able to do those things, especially if retirement's going to last 30 or 40 years. Mm-hmm. So you have to plan for that. And one of the things that I think is misleading, and I'm not sure why it's done this way, probably just out of simplicity, but if you look at an agency retirement estimate, you know, this is produced by different contractors, whether it's you know, GRB or any of the others, and they do have a withholding on there. And sometimes the agency makes use of it to show the federal tax withholding. but generally it's a way underestimate. You know, I've seen people with a $6,000 a month retirement with $120 coming out for federal tax, and that is way off the actual amount that you're going to have to pay in federal taxes, especially when you add income from your TSP and from Social Security. Like I said, you could be up there close to what you were making as an employee if you have done the planning. So don't underestimate not only federal tax, but in many states, you're going to have to pay income tax on your retirement income as well. And that includes your TSP distributions, in most cases, your Social Security benefit, as well as your CSRS or FERS government pension. So taxes are part of retirement, unfortunately.
Well, while you were saying that, I'm thinking of a friend who's gone into partial retirement. And in order, of course, his income has dropped, but in order to keep it up, he stopped things like his thrift savings plan contribution and a couple of other things, flexible spending account, things like that. And as a result of dropping those, his income, his actual income has gone up. And he's, of course, not making as much as he was when he was working full time, but very close.
Yeah, it's not as big of a difference as people think. And like you said, there's certain withholdings like the TSP, your retirement contributions, the FICA tax, the Medicare tax, you no longer pay those. So your retirement income from that respect goes a little further. But also keep in mind that your health insurance premiums are now going to come out on an after-tax basis.
Oh,
so
yes.
There is that part to keep in mind. And your income can affect your amount you pay for Medicare Part B. So that's tax-related as well. And then add to that all the different dates that are important when it comes to taking money out of your TSP account. You're going to need an accountant or just a very good understanding of how taxes and retirement work.
You know, something I just thought of when you were saying that is that the person who's working, the premiums come out on a pre-tax, correct, basis.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
But if you, once you're retired, so if you have a husband and wife combination, one's working and one's not, it's better to have the premiums coming out of the working spouse's income, correct?
Yep, absolutely. And if you're both still working, I just got this question this morning by email. If you and your spouse are still working, and I had the situation where the husband was going to retire in 2 years, the wife is going to work at least another 8 years, she expects. So he's going to switch over to have her carry the health insurance. He's been carrying it up until now. So they're going to move it into her paycheck. So when he does retire 2 years from now, he won't carry the health insurance into retirement because he'll still be covered under her.
Mm-hmm.
And then once she retires, then they can split off and do two self-only plans again, which will, again, save money in retirement. But while she's still working, it's cheaper for her to carry the self plus one and be able to deduct, in some cases, $6,000 a year from their taxable income.
Yeah, that's a chunk of change over a couple mm-hmm. of years there.
Yep.
Yeah, that is really interesting and things that people need to look at. And the tax implications, I know the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, NARF, every year, I think it's about March or April. Yeah.
Yep.
They come out with their very popular tax issue, and it is very popular because it shows state by state what's deductible, what's not taxed, what is taxed. And it's important to the point that you and I both know people, and I'm always citing my friend, worked in Northern Virginia, moved to Washington State, right across the river from Portland, Oregon. So Washington State has no state taxes, Oregon had no sales tax, and it was like people in this area who moved to Delaware because there's no
Maryland,
sales tax.
Yep.
Yeah. And it sounds trivial at first, but when you crunch the numbers, sometimes all things being equal, it's worth it.
It's a savings. That's right. It's always nice to live on the border of that kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the States.
Okay. Now here, number three, ignoring the difference between your leave service computation date and your retirement service computation date. So glad you're here. Because I don't know.
Yeah, and that's a real issue for some people because that's getting into really personnel information, and most employees don't understand that. You know, if you ask some people, they don't even know what their SCD is, let alone retirement versus leave SCD. So where this can come into play or where this can be a problem is a couple of situations. Generally, someone who has military service, you'll find that there can be some discrepancies, especially if they retired from the military, because on your leave credit to go from 4 to 6 to 8 hours of annual leave. You get credit for things like campaign service and combat time, even if you're retired from the military. But for FERS retirement or CSRS retirement, we can't count any of that military service if it's already included in military retired pay. So that's just one example. Another situation might be somebody who was hired as a seasonal worker or a summer hire, and they didn't have retirement coverage in the beginning of their career. Well, that seasonal work still counts for leave credit, but it doesn't count for retirement credit. And sometimes you can't even make a deposit for it if it was performed after 1988. So just those two things I mentioned there probably make some people's heads spin.
Sure.
So this is some place where your HR office can really come in handy. And the way to find this type of information out is if you're able to ask for a retirement estimate to be prepared. I would like to see those done 3 years, 5 years out from your retirement date. So if you do catch a mistake like that or catch a...
Take that long to straighten it out.
You have time to fix it. That's
okay.
Right.
All right. We need to take a short break here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 a.m. Then we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Tammy Flanagan, a benefits expert who is now doing private consulting from her home in Florida, but she's around the country all the time. And Tammy, once again, could you give us your address if people want to get in touch with you?
Sure. It's retirefederal.com, and you can send emails there. We have Contact Us page, so feel free to do that. And I'd like to answer questions if I can, and we also provide services if someone needs to sit down and talk things over and learn more about their own retirement planning.
Okay, we're talking about the seven deadly sins of retirement planning, the mistakes you can make, and a very important one here, and it's one that's a subject, it's like life insurance. Nobody wants to talk about it, but it's out there. Long-term care insurance. The government has a program. There are others. People who are familiar with it realize that not that long ago, 15, 20 years ago, there were dozens of companies that offered long-term care insurance, which covers things that Medicare and others do not cover. And I know at the Washington Post, I joined it. I was very young, but I joined it anyhow. I got a low premium. I've paid into it ever since, wasted every penny, and I'm delighted that I haven't had to use it, and I hope I never do. Hope I waste it all, quote,
That's
waste
right.
it all. But the number of companies that are offering long-term care insurance has dropped to, I think there are only five or six in the entire United States. It's so expensive, they failed to estimate the cost, they failed to estimate how long, you know, the people are living longer and requiring care longer, and it's absolutely essential, correct?
Yeah, I think if nothing else, think about what if, you know, what if I should need that type of personal care sometime in life? You know, back in the day, you know, we took care of our parents because we all lived, you know, around the block from each other, and your mom moved in with you, and she just got a little forgetful, and you took care of her till she was 76 and had a heart attack and died. But today it's different. You know, we live across the country. A lot of people don't have children that would even be able to take that role as caregiver. And sometimes you're by yourself. You know, you're the last man standing in the family, and what are you going to do? So I think having a plan for long-term care is essential. You know, there are some folks who can rely on the military because they're retired disabled vets and they can get into a VA facility quite easily. Others, not so much. And so there is long-term care insurance, which I think is something really to think about, not go overboard with it. I don't think anybody should pay for the full cost of care through their long-term care insurance because that would be a very expensive policy.
Yeah.
But I call it crisis insurance, you know, because you've known someone who went from independent to dependent overnight, whether they had a stroke or they fell. And they're older, and it just takes a lot longer to recover. And sometimes you don't recover from those situations, and you need some assistance, whether it's bathing or dressing or feeding, all those things we never want someone to help us with. So the federal plan is there. It's added some benefits last year, that are really making it a little more attractive. They'll allow the premium to reduce when you turn 85 if you never went into claim. And they also will provide a death benefit if you die without going into claim and your policy has been kept up. So those things will make it a little more attractive to people who may have hesitated in the past. And those were put in place to try to avoid those big premium increases that we saw twice over the history of the program. So I'm like you, Mike. I'm glad I bought mine when I was 47 yeah. years old, because I've got a nice, reasonable rate. And it goes up with inflation, yeah. so it maintains its value. So I would certainly encourage people to think about what if. You know, some people are self-insured. They have plenty of savings. They're not using their savings to live on day to day. And perhaps they can pay for care out of pocket. But that's not the majority of folks.
No, and I remember when we got ours at the Washington Post, it was a group plan. Very good plan at the time. Didn't have the inflation protection, but, you know, still insurance. But it was so far away and so remote, and yet if the company actually dropped the health insurance, it became so expensive. They grandfathered us in as a group, so yeah. I still have it, and the people in my group still have it. But nobody else there can get it from that particular company, and that's what's happening as more and more companies drop it. The fact is, will it even exist in the future? It will for people who have it currently. But if That's you're right. if you're waiting to get it until you're, quote, a little bit older, save a little bit of money, it's maybe not such a good idea.
Now, plus there is medical underwriting even on the federal plan. So if you happen to get diagnosed with an illness like MS or Parkinson's, it's unlikely that you'd qualify to even get a policy. So it's better to get it when you're healthy and younger. And it's more affordable, and you'll pay over time. Like you said, you've been paying quite a few years, but if you ever had to go into claim, heaven forbid, you'd get your money back in the first year, if not the first 3 months of needing care. So it's well worth it, and we all hope we don't get our money's worth out of it. And like you said, we're happy to pay for it if we don't.
You know, there again, I've never understood the people who talk about they don't want to waste money on insurance, and I think, yes, you do. You know,
yeah,
you don't. You buy fire insurance. You don't hope your house will burn down unless you're an arsonist or in financial trouble. You don't hope you're going to need long-term care insurance, and you know you're going to need life insurance, which is yeah. a different matter. So, Tammy, got about 60 seconds. Sum up.
Okay. So, yeah, if you read the column that you wrote today, Mike, that I helped you with, there are a lot of things to watch out for as you plan for retirement. So I think this is a good list to start your planning, whether you're 10 years away or whether you're retiring on December 31st this year. It's not too late to evaluate where you are and make sure that you're ready financially to make that move. And then you can start planning for the fun.
And the bottom line is, it's a complicated system. It's a three-tiered system. There are lots of moving parts, but it is a very good retirement plan, and it is a good problem to have.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I'm glad to help people out.
Thank you, Tammy. Thank you, Eric White, for running the show today. We'll hope to see you all here next week. And remember, all our shows are archived here on federalnewsnetwork.com, so you can listen again to a complicated show like this. You can refer it to a friend, and hope you all have a good week. Stay safe. See you next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
You've been listening to Your Turn with Mike Causey, brought to you by WEPA on Federal News Network. WEPA is the life insurance choice of over 46,000 federal workers and their families. Learn more at weepa.org.